Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Today we will have Rick Frisby from Robust Wealth. But before we get into our interview, let's go ahead and have a quick word from our sponsors.
Thanks, Miranda. Hey, if you've ever wondered if there were a way to take advantage of all that online chatter, the millions of investors chatting away on social media, your wait's over because the Buzz Index uses that same artificial intelligence technique used by many of the world's most sophisticated hedge funds, and you can make their edge your edge. It trades under ticker symbol BUZ. Check it out on their website. Head to moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ for a link to the Buzz Index website and more information. That's moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ. All right, on to Miranda and the interview.
Welcome to the show, Rick. Thank you so much for coming and joining us today from Robust Wealth.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Now, you talk a lot about robo-investing, is that right?
That's right, yes.
Just for our listeners, can you just give us a quick rundown of what robo-investing is?
It's a great question. At the end of the day, to us, robo-investing is all about automated rebalancing of people's portfolios, which encompasses the trading of their portfolios. And that's all done to make sure the portfolios or their personal asset allocation models or frameworks remain in line with their goals, as we're very focused on goal-based investing.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Like the whole idea of goal-based investing, you know, really kind of helps clarify, you know, what you're trying to do with your money. So now when you're using, you know, robo-investing, a lot of the time, robo-investors make use of modern portfolio theory and the idea of asset allocation rather than investing in individual items. Is that kind of your philosophy as well?
It is, with one sort of notable nuance, which is we think this is a nice little competitive strength of ours. We do take in-kind, low-cost individual securities, specifically equities that a client might have. So if they bought some or were gifted, you know, some Berkshire Hathaway back in the 90s or, you know, General Electric way back when it has a low basis, we don't ask the client to liquidate that, convert that to cash, experience what could be a negative taxable event, and then only deploy the cash. We will take those securities and build what's called a completion portfolio around them with the rest of our asset allocation framework. So we think that's important. And we do a lot of our algorithms for our trading are very tax cognizant in terms of how they trade and try to find tax loss harvesting when we're keeping the portfolios and the ranges they're intended to be by asset class as we rebalance over the goals period, because we know that, you know, nothing hurts investment performance like taxes. And then, of course, as well, fees. And we're always looking for low cost securities and trading to implement from a fee perspective as well.
So now when we're talking about robo-investing, now you did mention the tax situation and the fee situation, but what are some of the other advantages that come with doing the robo-investing?
Yeah, sure.
Rather than like taking an active hand in your own trading?
Right. I'd say first and foremost, the main thing is knowing and having the comfort that you're in an automated, ongoing digital fashion. Your portfolio is being kept and rebalanced towards your goals. So it's very easy for portfolios to have different securities run up or run down and get out of alignment with the goal. And then staying on top of that and trading that on a regular basis to make sure they're within their appropriate ranges and haven't drifted outside of them. And just giving you that comfort that knowing that you're tracking towards your intended goal, I think is a real key advantage of, you know, robo-advisors in general. Some of the upfront work around taking behavioral risk questionnaires and making sure that the goals you have are aligned with, you know, your personal volatility sensitivities, your current wealth position, your aspired for future wealth aspirations, those types of things. So it puts a lot of structure around someone's investing lifespan in terms of both time period risk-based investing as well as the long-term goals.
Yeah, and I think part of it too, though, is helping to take that emotion out of the investing.
Yes.
A lot of the time, you know, when you're not confident that there's a plan and it's working towards your goals, it's easy to get caught up in a market event and kind of panic and then make terrible decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know myself just behaviorally, and I've been in the capital markets over 2 decades, worked at a large global asset manager, just kind of lived in the markets. And with my own personal portfolio, you're always keeping sort of one eye towards what's on TV, and you see a security you own that may be doing something, and you start focusing on one-off scenarios, reacting to them. And it's not great overall for sort of a long-term horizon in terms of what your ultimate objectives are. So I think that's one of just probably the most important key advantage of a robo, is that it does, like you said, just take the emotion out of it and lets you kind of back up and know that it's being run and rebalanced in a thoughtful way, just on an ongoing basis.
And when you're talking about robo investing and making sure that you're staying on track, how do you start out by creating, you know, we talked about, you mentioned goals-based investing a little bit earlier, but how do you start out by creating these goals so that you know that you're getting the right mix with the robo investing?
So the way we're set up and work is you can do it sort of three ways. You can, working with your advisor, go into a model portfolio, and it could be one of our asset allocation model portfolios, you know, think conservative, moderate, aggressive. And those are sort of static risk-based portfolios. The advisor might have their own model portfolios that they offer to their customers or clientele. And then we work with outside companies like BlackRock and Franklin Templeton to offer their model portfolios. And so you can go into a basic sort of asset allocation framework and just be assigned to that and take that type of comfort away from that scenario. The second of the three would just be our risk frameworks, where the advisor sort of determines, say, you know, 0 to 100, you know, from low risk to high risk, kind of as measured by potential volatility of the portfolio, where you should be in terms of your age and what you're trying to accomplish and your current wealth levels, like I was saying, and your sensitivity to volatility. And you can get what's called a risk framework, which is sort of that bespoke, customized portfolio that gets a risk score 0 to 100 for you. They can also have you take a risk tolerance questionnaire to assign that. And that's a very helpful, thoughtful manner to get to that and assess that. And then the last way, and that's sort of determining your risk level. The last way is a really personalized approach, which is they can create a glide path for you, a bespoke, again, customized glide path that glides down over time. So over time, as you approach your goal, it reduces its exposure to risk assets. And you can do multiple glide paths. You can have a glide path that glides toward retirement. You could have a glide path that maybe hypothetically glides towards a vacation home at the beach or in the mountains that you're trying to get to in, you know, 15, 20 years or 10 or 12 years or any time period. So because we're goal-based investing, you can have multiple glide paths. So you can have that real personalized approach as sort of the third framework.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So now when we're talking about just like robo-investing in general, mm-hmm. what are some of the things that maybe make it a poor fit for somebody? So is this something that's not right for every investor? So what are some of the drawbacks, some of the things that make it a poor fit for some investors?
I would say if somebody is a real active trader and they might have one account that is automated in sort of a robo framework, and then they might have, you know, other more discretionary type accounts where they like to see a lot of active trading going on, that's definitely not a good fit for a robo framework. As well, you know, most robos, ourselves included, we trade across ETFs. We actually also include mutual funds, others do as well. Like I said before, we'll take in individual securities, but if somebody's constructing a portfolio where they want to have a lot of things like bonds that aren't traded on exchanges or just individual securities, options, that type of thing, those aren't really good robo fits when you're defining a robo, at least as I am, as something where you're trying to have inputs, i.e. underlying ETFs and mutual funds that really help you manage towards longer term horizons in sort of a thoughtful, automated way.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And you know, and I've found too that sometimes when you're doing a robo investor, so I personally use Betterment for a lot of things like my retirement plan and my travel fund. And so I find that sometimes you miss that sort of personal touch and the little adjustments that you can make. And so I really think this sort of hybrid model that you're talking about is likely to kind of start taking place of a total, complete robo-investing model where people can say, well, I have more assets, I want a little more customization with my portfolio, and have an advisor that can help kind of tweak that a little bit. And also somebody who can help you make a long-term plan, right? If you're trying to plan out your future and trying to get that roadmap going for college and retirement and making sure you have what you want to live on and all of that kind of stuff, just signing up for any robo-advisor probably isn't going to provide you with the support that you need.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, that's when we were first creating the business, there was sort of a lot of decisions that had to be made around exactly what you're talking about. And we decided to go sort of 100% the B2B route where you had the advisor always in the picture. And you can do advice and counsel from a financial advisor different ways. It can be sort of more hybrid telechat. It can be where you're there for just kind of telephonic inquiries and it's more hands-off. Other folks, I mean, people are just different across the spectrum, as you well know. I'm not telling you anything you're not already aware of in terms of the level of support that they want from their advisor. But we just felt, you know, advisors bring a lot, so much to the table across the whole picture, whereas admittedly, we're in the picture doing a lot of key things, but it is the core value proposition at the end of the day is, you know, helping create the portfolios, rebalancing them towards their targets, putting a lot around that. But when it comes to the full spectrum of advice that a financial advisor delivers, we just think it's great to kind of pair or match the technology with the person.
Yeah, that's kind of where it's going to be going in the future, for sure. So we are out of time, but thank you so much for joining us. So real quick, can you tell our listeners where to find you online?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So check us out, please, if you will, at robustwealth.com. Advisors can sign up for a demo there if they'd like, and we have a real nice tour of it. Another great place to see us, if you will, is just we have a nice platform demo video on Vimeo. So if you go to that and to vimeo.com and just type in Robust Wealth, you'll find us quickly and you can get a good sense for all that the platform delivers. So thanks so much for this opportunity. Really appreciate the conversation.
Yeah, thank you. We'll go ahead and get another quick message from our sponsors and then move into the roundtable portion of the show.
Thanks, Miranda and Rick. Hey, before we get to the second half of today's show, if you've ever thought, you know what, so many people talk about investing on social media, I wonder if I can get this wisdom of the crowd working for you. Guess what? You can, because all that online chatter of investors on social media that some of the world's most sophisticated hedge funds use, you now have that at your fingertips and you can make their edge your edge. It's called the Buzz Index. It's licensed to an exchange traded fund and trades under ticker symbol BUZ. And it gives investors like you and I a portfolio of securities that show the highest degree of positive investor sentiment online. They don't use surveys. They don't guess. Instead, here's what they do. They target the most mentioned large company U.S. stocks across the social media landscape. The more active the conversation, the greater the reliability of that buzz. And each of the most mentioned stocks is given an insight score based on Buzz's proprietary analytics. And the 75 stocks that had the most bullish score, those each month are included in the index. That's how it works. Invest in the wisdom of the crowd. Head to moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ for a link to the Buzz Index and more information. By the way, I invest in the Buzz Index. Doesn't make it right for you, but I definitely have to disclose that. Do your own homework. Been very happy with mine, but your results may vary. Let's get on with the show, though. Back to Miranda. Nice job with Rick, Miranda.
Thanks so much, Joe. I'm so excited to be here with you guys, though. I mean, it was cool to talk to Rick, but it's so much cooler to be with you all. So let's go ahead and say hello to the crowd. We've got our cast of regulars. First of all, we have Linda. How are you today, Linda?
I'm doing great. How are you, Miranda?
I'm doing pretty well, pretty excited. Summer is making an appearance, so that's exciting. What about you, Doug? How are you today?
Doing very well. We have some relatives flying in today from America to Israel, so, you know, take the week off.
Nice. And thank you for making sure that, you know, their travel plans revolved around the Money Tree podcast.
Yeah, after very the show is on.
And what about you, Joe? How are you doing today, Joe?
I'm better now that I'm with you, Miranda.
Aww. So let's get started here. So Rick, one of the things that Rick talked about was goal-based investing and using your investing strategy and putting together your portfolio in a way that helps you achieve your goals. And whether you do that with robo-advisors or human beings or a combination of the two, the reality is that investing can help you reach your goals. And so I thought it would be kind of cool to kind of talk about our own goals and how we use investing to reach them. So let's go ahead and start with you, Joe, because you are the man. You are the man that says invest with the end in mind. So let's go ahead and talk to you. What are some of your goals and what are some of your financial goals or even life goals? And how does investing help you reach them?
You know, it's funny is my goals are a little different than a lot of people's because I love what I do and I want to do that forever. I know that my spouse, Cheryl, also loves what she does. So when it comes to traditional retirement, and a lot of people you read statistically that don't love their job, we do. So ours is still there, but it's around financial independence, right? And it's funny because the amount of money we've saved so far, a lot of people, I think, in the financial independence retire early movement, the FIRE movement, would say that they have enough money to be financially independent. But I'm a guy that's done the math for a long period of time, and I'm very conservative, so I don't think that I'm quite there. So my goal is financial independence, but at a very conservative rate of return to make sure that if anything goes wrong, I don't have to worry about where we go next. So for me, it's all about flexibility, travel, and aligning what I do professionally with my goal to travel. So one of my main goals is to be able to do the Stacky Benjamins podcast and this podcast from anywhere. If I could go to Italy and live in Italy for 3 months during the summer and have fast enough internet there that I can work during the summer while still doing a little bit of traveling on the weekends or, you know, the half day that I'm not working, I would love to do that. So flexibility is my goal.
Joe, are you open to telling us what that conservative number is? I'm getting curious.
Well, it's funny because, you know, you look at things like the 4% rule, number one, Doug, which you and I both know people use all the time. And the 4% rule is very flawed.
Also, so, total trash. Just say it's total trash.
Yeah. Well, it's not total trash. I think it's a fine starting point. But when you dig in, you find out that it's, you know, there's cracks in that foundation. So if I can use a rule like the 3%, you know, if I can move it down to 3% instead, that's great. And then number two is a lot of people will use like an 8% rate of return. I'd like to be able to do it on a 5% rate of return. If I can do it on a 5, that's much better.
Wait, so say that again. That means you would make 5%, but only spend 3%. That's sort of your goal, your conservative number?
Well, I think right, when we're planning things out, and I do the same kind of thing too, when you're projecting out, well, how much should I set aside each month to reach whatever X arbitrary number that I've got or whatever my goals I think should be. You know, a lot of people are setting it aside based on an 8% rate of return. I know people who do it based on a 10% rate of return. I'm not quite as conservative as Joe. I base mine out on a 6% rate of return. And that's how I figure out how much money I should be setting aside each month to help me reach, you know, my long-term retirement goal. But I do like what Joe says about, hey, that 4% rule and most rules of thumb are great as starting points, but they're not things that you want to kind of build your whole financial plan around. Is that right, Joe?
Yeah. I mean, if you use these rules of thumb always have an Achilles heel attached to it. So figure out what the Achilles heel is and then try to cover up that Achilles heel. And for mine, you know, probably if I wanted to stop working right now, I probably could. I just like, as long as I'm happy doing what I'm doing, building more flexibility into my plan, making it more conservative. And then when the time comes that I have to stop doing or decide that my goals change, because I've seen so many people's goals change over the years. If my goal changes, I want it to be as conservative as possible.
Well, and I think Joe and Doug bring up good points because we have these models and studies that show, you know, 4%, 3% will be the magic percentage to withdraw from your retirement fund each year in order to have it never run out. You know, they're always doing these studies. And we're also in this very low interest rate environment, right, where there's just no yield on anything. But because I think that interest rates are more cyclical and moving in a cycle, and we've sort of bottomed out of that cycle and we're heading higher, and it's not going to be a perfect straight line up, but I think rates will be higher. And who knows what interest rates will be when you actually retire, Joe. I mean, you could have some 8% bonds out there. You could have some 10% bonds out there. But then the question becomes, well, what's the rate of inflation and what's the real interest rate that you're earning? So it's very hard to make those projections when we're talking 10, 15, 20, 30 years into the future.
Yeah,
for sure.
I agree with what you're saying, Linda, which is why when I do these tests for myself as well as for clients, I'm very disinclined to use a number like you guys are saying. I'd much prefer to use some sort of, you know, real market simulation. Mostly we use a Monte Carlo simulation, which is just a tool that tests not just one or two scenarios, but it literally can test tens of thousands of different possibilities based on an asset allocation that we can choose and easily change, because that's the part you can really easily change, as well as looking at what the expenses are over the years. And you know, you plug all this into the computer and it tells you, you know, based on all of the parameters you set in, you have, you know, let's say an 80% chance of success or a 90% chance of success. To me, that seems so much more useful than if you just put in one fixed figure, because if you don't make it and it, or, you know, the world changes as it occasionally does, you could end up being, you know, 60, 70, 80 years old. And all of a sudden what you planned on working doesn't work and you don't really have a backstop.
Yeah. And the reality is interest rates are one of the most volatile things that we deal with in the financial world. And, you know, in 1982, no one would have believed that interest rates would be near zero, 2012, 14, whatever, right around there, bottoming out. And now that interest rates are heading higher again, it might sound crazy to somebody to talk about an 8% interest rate or a 10% interest rate in the future, but we just don't know. I mean, they can swing from, what were we, 18% in 1982? I mean, that is a huge move. And that's very difficult to try to, you know, determine financial instruments that you're buying that are going to create a yield for decades to come for your retirement. So it becomes very challenging with, you know, with interest rate movements.
Are you suggesting that we could really be going in that direction? That far in that direction?
Who knows?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, that's a 30-year cycle. It's really, interest rates over time have tended to follow more of a 30-year cycle. So we're just very early in the cycle of heading back up, but we definitely, you know, I've seen the Fed increase interest rates and the Fed is meeting today and we'll see what they have to say. But we definitely are heading back up toward a higher interest rate cycle. And just yesterday, we had a well-known investor billionaire who said he thought interest rates should be 1.5% higher than they are today. So, you know, the economy is definitely strong. The housing market's very strong. And, you know, interest rates certainly could be much higher. And their purpose in raising rates, of course, is to slow the economy. So the economy could use some slowing and it could absorb higher interest rates. And we'll just see how high those go. But again, it's not going to be in a straight line. We could have them go up and then reduce and then go up and then reduce. But over time, it tends to be about a 30-year cycle from peak to peak.
Yeah. So keeping that in mind, Linda, what are some of your goals then? And how do you invest to help you reach your goals when you're thinking about these cycles and these trends and what we're doing with interest rates or the market or whatever it is? How do you use that to inform your money moves as you're working towards your goals?
You know, everyone has to go with what level of risk they're comfortable with. You know, Warren Buffett is 80 something years old and still has his portfolio in stocks. Of course, he's one of the richest men in the world, so that's a different story. But my point is just that different people have comfort with different investments that they're invested in and the level of risk that they're taking. And personally, I think the one thing that most people, the one mistake most people make is not taking enough risk. They're being too conservative and they have 20, 30, 40 years to invest and they're not invested in stocks or not invested enough in equities that are going to get them to the highest compounding rate. So for me, it's really all about the compounding and it's all about the accumulation of wealth for as long as I can. And so I'm very comfortable being invested in what is considered an aggressive portfolio of equities.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, you want to make sure that you're paying attention to your risk tolerance and figuring out what's going to be practical for you. What about you, Doug? You've talked a little bit, but what are some of your goals and how do you make them work with investing?
Yeah, so like Joe, I like what I do as well, But I do see the benefits of being able to live the lifestyle I like to lead, which I think I'm pretty blessed to be able to do that. I think one of the issues about talking about being a long-term investor, especially since we've been doing this show, the market's been doing pretty well. It's easy to talk about saying, well, I don't really need the money and I'm a long-term investor, so I'm very aggressive. And, you know, we're talking about numbers like 5%, 8%, 10% a year. And I think what we have to remember, again, as Linda has pointed out in the past, that the world may move in real cycles, and it doesn't always have to be that you're going to have these long bull markets. And one of the problems that a lot of people have is they're accumulating and they're saving, like Miranda's talking about, and building up their portfolio and investing in the stock market. And, you know, all of a sudden they go, wow, I got, you know, $100,000 or I have $1 million, and they feel great about it. And then the market crashes, you know, and that $1 million drops to $530,000. And they go, holy cow, you know, I understood long-term investing, but now what do I do? And A, obviously, it doesn't feel very good. And B, it really changes the way people invest. A lot of times they'll stop putting money in, which is, you know, historically would have been a mistake, or they'll sell out and say, you know, maybe this just isn't for me. And all those years that they were investing in the bull market, they're just going to throw away. So I think that the takeaway about being a goal-oriented investor is you've got to have a financial plan with a specific asset allocation model. And if you're going to be an aggressive investor, like I think a lot of us are, you know, you got to be in it through thick and thin. It's not just, oh, I'm an aggressive investor because it's a bull market. It's saying that I'm just in it for the long term. And that's the beauty of Warren Buffett, that he really is in it for a long term. And by the way, of course, if the market dropped 99%, he'd probably still be pretty close to a billionaire. So he's not always the right example, but he certainly is a good stock picker.
That's a great point, Doug. Meeting with clients over the years, I can't tell you the number of people who were incredibly aggressive as the market went up, or so they said, no, I'm aggressive. And then they were the first ones screaming the second the market started going down. I'm like, really? What happened to Mr. Aggressive? Like, well, where did Mr. Aggressive go?
Hey, we're all geniuses when the market's on a bull run. We're all stock picking geniuses when the market's winning. And then when the market goes down, it's totally not our fault.
Well, and it is very scary. And that's one thing I don't think that we do in the investment community that well, is prepare people for those regular pullbacks, because you are going to get 20% declines on a regular basis. You are going to get 30%, 40% on, you know, a less frequent basis, but they are out there. And, you know, seeing that the markets recover, and the best thing to do in most cases is usually nothing and just stay put and wait for the market to come back and not panic, because it's the people that panic and sell at the bottom that are really locking in their losses. So I think we really have to be more aware of the volatility of the market. It's part of investing. And rather than think it's an abnormality of some sort or an aberration, it's part of investing. It's part of something to expect and to realize happens every so many years.
Yeah. And keep that in mind as you're working on your goals. I think that that's one of the things that helps us stay on track, is remembering that it's going to lose some ground. And one of the things that people ask me a lot, because as some of you know, I actually have a travel fund and I keep it in a taxable investment account that's made up of ETFs. You know, people ask me, well, what happens if you have to sell at a loss? And, you know, and I say, well, the point of my travel fund is for me to have capital available and for it to grow at a pretty reasonable rate. And I've only had to sell at a loss once. And the one time I did that, I still had enough capital in the account for it to like take advantage of the recovery. I had the money I needed to do what I wanted to do. So that worked out. And then I just ended up taking it as a tax deduction. So I think being clear on what the money is there for and why it's in there can help some of us sleep better at night. And I think if you're looking at it from a long-term perspective, like you were talking about, Linda, if you're looking at it from a retirement perspective and a 20 to 30 year time cycle perspective, selling during, you know, the next market event, and there will be a next market event, there's always a market event coming sometime. You know, if you sell during the next market event, you know, and you sell out of your retirement portfolio, then yeah, that's a problem. Like you said, you lock in the losses, and that can really disrupt your long-term plan. All right. On that note, thank you for joining us. Let's go around and find out what's happening in everybody's neighborhood. Doug, what's happening on your end?
Well, actually, Miranda, we just had a really, really great episode on the Goldstein on Gelt show where I brought on this guy named Eli Knopf, who is an expert in cross-border investing. You know, that's really what I spend most of my time doing. And we put together this tax and investment reminders checklist for Americans who live in Israel. And it turned out that lots and lots of people downloaded it, and I got a lot of great feedback on it. So I just want to make it available. It's really meant for people who are listening to us outside the United States who have U.S. investments. But just go to GoldsteinOnGelt.com, and you can look at the episode called Why FBAR Reports Are Important. And it's really critical for people who are, for Americans who are living outside the U.S. to get a copy of this.
Thanks, Doug. Sounds like it'll be a really useful resource for many investors, especially expats. What about you, Linda? What's happening over in your neck of the woods?
Well, over at Be Wealthy and Smart, I've been talking about best performing sectors that are happening because sometimes people aren't aware whether it's the large caps, the mid caps, the small caps that are performing the best, as well as certain countries and what sectors are doing well. For example, is real estate outperforming or is biotech? So those are the kinds of things we talk about. Where is real performance coming from year to date? And that's at Be Wealthy and Smart.
Very cool. And what about you, Joe?
Over at the Money in the Morning podcast, we take two headlines every day from the financial press, and we talk about what that means for your money. And a couple of those headlines, Americans just paid off a ton of credit card debt. So we'll talk about that and strategies to pay off credit card debt. And also, a new study shows that in-person financial advice is something that people really want, even though there's lots of technology and cool apps and whiz bangs to figure out your money situation. The new study says people still want that human touch of somebody in their corner working with them. We'll talk about how to avoid bad people working with you on the show too at Money in the Morning.
Very cool. All right. And happening over at Planting Money Seeds, you can go ahead and take a look. I actually talk about my travel fund and how I use my travel fund. So if you're interested in how I use investing to meet short-term goals, head on over to PlantingMoneySeeds.com. Thank you so much for listening to us today. As you know, you can head over to MoneyTreePodcast.com. Send us your questions. We just recently had a couple of listener question episodes, so we've cleared out the inbox and we're ready for some more. So head on over to MoneyTreePodcast.com/contact and you can send us your questions. We'd love to hear from you. Don't forget to subscribe to us. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and everywhere fine podcasts are sold. And remember, no one will care for your money as well as you do. So invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at MoneyTreePodcast.com for more free investing resources.